genuinely, there's never been a better time to be a car designer, because we are in a position of asking what's next. How, you know, you talk about AI, how does that get used? You look at the disruption in the industry. What do we do next? There's so many questions. There's so many opportunities, therefore, and creativity will always shine through.
Hello and welcome to the CDE podcast. Today, we're speaking with Dominic Najafi. He's the head of exterior design at Chevrolet's Advanced Design Studio in the UK.
Hello, Dom. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Yeah, very nice. Very happy to be here. Good to meet you.
Neither of us are from Germany, but we sit across from one another in Munich. Whereabouts are you based in the UK?
In UK, we're based in the lovely town of Leamington Spa in the Midlands. Nice location, quite near to other nice areas too. Close to London, close to the north. Very good location and the epicenter of automotive design as well. So we've got a great network around us.
That is a lovely part of the world. There are no towns that end in spa in the UK that aren't quite nice.
Exactly. It's Royal Leamington Spa as well. So it's, very esteemed location. The Queen did go there, apparently, and that's why it's royal.
Seems unfair that we put all the designers in Leamington Spa, but we put all the engineers in Milton Keynes. They definitely got a bum deal, didn't they?
Well, we need the inspiration. So, all the engineers, there's a few engineers in Leamington Spa as well, absolutely. But Milton Keynes is a bit more of a Formula One focus, isn't it? And that seems to be where the action is over there.
So we're going to talk extensively about your design studio and your work at GM and your work prior to GM at JLR and Bentley. But first things first, where did you grow up? Where are you from originally? And how far back can you trace your passion for automotive design?
Okay. As a car designer born in the 80s, my story is probably very similar to 99% of other car designers born in the 80s. And it all comes from a very young age, developing a love of drawing and a love of cars. So let's think. So I was born in Manchester in 1980. And my mum was a staff nurse, my dad was an IT computer programmer, and very humble beginnings. We lived in North Manchester, and back in the day before the internet, when cars weren't easy to access and glamorous cars weren't easy to see, so when you did see one, it was a big deal and a big event. And I remember occasionally seeing a glamorous car and just being blown away by this thing that moved, that looked like art, that sounded beautiful, and really captivated me from a very, very young age. My dad used to have an interest in cars too. And so occasionally he'd bring back a car magazine when he was, coming back from work. And I'd delve into these. And there is pictures of me in my cot as a baby, just like surrounded by car magazines in my cot. And there's even, my parents used to say that they'd wake up in the middle of the night and just hear like pages turning when I was just reading looking through car magazines as a baby in my cart and stuff. So it's been I'm a bit of a weird child when I was growing up, but always had this love of cars. And I think, my dad and Peter and mum, a car designer, that wasn't a normal job. That wasn't a job anyone knew about or had any knowledge of, but by looking at car magazines, I could see, there's articles there. Occasionally you'd see a sketch or an interview with a car designer. I was like, this is a job. People draw these shapes, these cars. And from a very early age, I just knew I wanted to be a car designer. And but even in school, I remember seeing the careers tutor when it came to the point of like choosing our, what jobs we'd like to do, therefore what like GCSEs to study and stuff. And the careers advisor, she had this massive book and was looking through it. It's like, no, car designer's not in here. It can't be a job. And I was like, I know it's a job. So anyway, I did actually drag my dad. I was about, probably about 15, but I dragged my dad to the Royal College of Art to see the vehicle design show there. And then that's when he knew, it was like, okay, it's not normal for teenagers to be taking their dad to university to see something. So that's when he knew it was real. And he was like, okay, if you want to do this, you go for it. So that's when I really had the buy-in from my parents to really pursue it. And so I then ended up in Coventry University, which a lot of people in the team went to. And it was very famous at the time for having the vehicle design course there, the transport design course. And following in the footsteps of many great car designers, really proud to do that. And Coventry was a great experience and set me on the path, to the dream job. And it is genuinely, it's a dream job. Yeah.
It's funny, most designers I've spoken to, they kind of go, oh, well, I started as an artist and then I kind of just found my way into automotive design. But you're like, no, day one, I will draw cars for a living.
Yes, it was strange. And I think looking back, it would have been really strange for my parents to like, this little kid who's just so keen on doing that. But it turns out, you know, then you meet people when you get a job and when you... and it seems like you're not that weird. There's lots of other people like that too. It's just you didn't know them at the time. And so, it all comes from passion, all comes from this love of cars, love of drawing, putting the two together, starting to draw your own designs, own shapes. It's so inspiring to whenever you saw a car magazine with like designer sketches in there, that was wow, because they don't teach that at school. But then when you find out there's a university that teaches that, that's amazing. And that doesn't even feel like work. That's just a hobby, you know, learning to do a hobby better. And then, you know, if you get a job, it's like getting paid to do your hobby. That was the thought process. And a dream come true when I got that first job, finally.
And what was that first job when you graduated from your course?
Well, I did an internship at Bentley when I was at Coventry, a third year there, and completely fell in love with the workplace. I mean, you go to the, and it was very basic Bentley then. It was like a big shed, but it was owned by Volkswagen Group. So they were doing, you know, really great work, had some really highly recognized and... specialist designers in charge, and it was at a time when the first Continental GT wasn't quite launched. So when I was a student, I went there on internship. I got to see that car before it was launched, and I was like, "Okay, they're really doing some progressive stuff here. This is going to be great." And I just completely fell in love with the workplace. Stayed there all hours. Got all sorts of jobs to do as an intern, designing gear knobs and things. But I was just, people couldn't believe why I was staying there all night to do sketch gear knobs and things. But I was just in love with this place where you go to get paid to draw things, think of things, ideas, use your imagination, be part of the car industry, you know, in that quite basic studio at the time, you know, the clay models, big sketches on the wall. It was just like, my eyes were like, wow, okay, this is incredible. So absolutely fell in love with that. So that was my internship, and I was lucky enough to do okay and impress them enough. They offered me a job when I graduated. So I started my career at Bentley. I was 2 years as an interior designer at Bentley, and then 6 years as exterior designer. And so 8 years in total at Bentley, and I learned a huge amount there, really. That was a stepping stone. I learned all about what it takes to, the dedication required to get a design to the right level, to a level that is refined, that is that shows real attention to detail and craftsmanship. And I really learned about the work ethic required there, especially from the Volkswagen Group way of working, which was, you know, I always say to people that we were like soldiers at Bentley. We were like, it was like this work ethic of sketch, clay, and we were just almost like soldiers. But we were young, we were hungry, and we absolutely couldn't get enough of it. It was brilliant. And that work ethic and what I learned at Bentley really set me up, I think, for the future. And I look back on those times very, very fondly. You know, you have people like Robin Page, who was my first boss on the interior design team, Raul Perez, Dirk van Breckel. These names have got onto other great things now. But it was a really good little squad of design leadership who taught me a lot. Yeah,
you just touched on it there, but my next question was going to be, who were some really seminal figures in your early years as mentors, teachers, who you learned particularly useful things from?
I think there's a lot of people, and this is where you can start naming people and realize you're forgetting people. And if this is heard by one of those people, that'd be it'd be terrible. But I'll talk about some who spring to mind. I think, Robin Page as my first boss as an interior design manager, he was. And he was so organized, so professional, great attention to detail, and really knew how to work with the business, with the other stakeholders outside of design, knew how to bring them along the journey and make people feel involved. So I learned a huge amount from him. And then Raul Perez was my exterior chief then after that. And incredible creativity and attention to detail again. and this like work ethic of how to read a clay model. I really learned that at that phase, I think, how to read a clay model, how to judge surfaces and forms and lines, and that kind of training was absolutely invaluable, of like having a clay model there that is effectively a living and breathing thing with a team of modelers around it who are there for you to make your design come to life. And as a young kid almost, you know, working with these clay modelers, it could be quite intimidating. But once you build a rapport with them, you've got to earn that respect of like showing that you've got ideas, showing that you know what you're doing, but you're open-minded enough to learn from them as well and learn from their experience. That was fantastic. And then you could have a really good time developing a clay model. And there's nothing better than getting a clay model to a certain point, painting it, taking it outside and seeing that it's almost like a real car there that you've been part of, you know? So that's the beauty of the job. Not many jobs, every day you could, more often than not, you got a blank page. And at the end of that day, there's something there that wasn't there in the beginning. There's something new. And it's come from your imagination, or it's come from a brainstorm with other people. It's a super creative job, you know? And I think it's very fulfilling. I'm very lucky to have a job like that. So other people I want to mention a guy called Richie Gilmartin, actually, who was an interior designer. But what he was great at as well was this community spirit. He used to do a lot of charity work, okay? So as a young, very introverted kid almost at Bentley, suddenly I was with him doing charity bike rides, dressed as grannies. We did marathons and raised a lot of money for charity, but always with this under the umbrella of Go Granny Go, which is a charity. And we used to dress all in pink as grannies with fat suits on and then do these extreme things that I would have never thought of doing on my own. And that was really like opened my mind to, you know, just bringing me out of my shell, doing something you're uncomfortable doing. You learn a lot from that. You learn a lot about teamwork and community. And yeah, that was a fantastic kind of element to, aside from the job itself, but on those like the social side and doing things that, you know, not just for you, it's for someone else, something difficult that actually someone else benefits. And that was really good. That was really good. So he was definitely a mentor as well in my early days. So we're talking like my early 20s, you know, mid 20s now. 20 years ago.
I can't believe you just told a story about dressing up as grannies and going for runs and then connecting it to a genuinely useful life lesson as a designer about getting out of your skin and having a sense of community as a team.
Exactly.
Whatever it takes to bring you closer with your team members and make you feel comfortable around each other, right?
Yeah, I've dealt with the trauma. That's how I deal with the trauma of those situations. And seen the positive side to it.
So from a fairly conventional place of work at Bentley, to a pretty unconventional place of work where you now are. You head up the UK design studio for General Motors. Just tell us a little bit about what your team is all about and what they do.
Yeah, so my role is the head of studio and exterior design, but reporting to Julian Thompson, who's the design director. So Julian Thompson, great charismatic leader and very well known in car design circles. You know, he's the director of the studio, and he got me in for this opportunity, which was brilliant, and we were able to build a team from a completely blank page, which is a totally unique opportunity. Usually you go to a job, and even if you go to a job where you need to recruit people, there's still usually people there. But this was a genuine blank page to pick the team. And, you know, it was something we couldn't turn down, because just previously to that, I just touched on, I did do 12 years at JLR. And that's where I first met Julian. Julian employed me there. And what we really learned there as well was how to develop and evolve premium brands. And this has been really useful in joining GM. Drawing up this team from a blank page, pretty much everybody Julian asked and I asked to join came. And it meant we could just, you know, create a culture of creativity, of respect, like-minded people who help each other. You know, we can really create this special culture in this team. And it's why we've been able to really hit the ground running from day one, just start creating things that are really adding value to GM Global Design. They've embraced us amazingly, you know, with open arms. And they want to know what we think. They want to know our point of view. It's really been creatively really empowering, really invigorating. So the team we have now, there's now about 35 of us. We've got a brand new studio, as we mentioned, in the great Royal Leamington Spa. And we're a fully kitted out studio, fully capable to go from very first sketch to full size clay model. And our job really is to provide a very unique perspective on the established brands of GM, and just provide that provocative point of view, something that gives them a very, you know, how can I put it? Like, well, we don't want to just send 1,000 sketches over and say, pick one. What we want to do is create a very, very clear vision and say, hey, here's what we think you should do, and here's why. And so it gives the most value to them, but it also just allows them to see from a different side and think, okay, maybe there's something we've not thought about. Maybe we could go this way. So it's very challenging. And I always say we're not necessarily designing to, you know, win projects, because it's quite different. Designing to win is quite different to designing to drive change. If we designed to win, we could get what they're already doing and maybe just tweak a few things, and then it could win because those elements might be slightly better. But we're there to provide a very clear alternative perspective, but using all our insight and our experience of developing premium brands, of how things are in Europe, the trends in Europe we're seeing, the sensitivity to, you know, customers really engaging with things that have a clear purpose and a clear identity. And we're that's what we're doing. So it's an amazing job in GM. There's quite a few brands, you know, and they're all very different to each other, all offer unique opportunities. And some of the most, you know, famous nameplates, things like Corvette and Cadillac, you know, it's dream stuff. And so we've been, you know, absolutely thrilled to be able to show our first Corvette concept. Well, our first concept, which is this Corvette concept we've just launched. And that showcases really our abilities as a team, and a very varied team. And it's been already 2.5 years, but already an amazing journey we've had. And yeah, and the leadership in GM have really embraced us and given us freedom, steered us on the right path when needed. You know, we're learning about GM. You've got to be very humble in this business, okay? And just understand that you don't know everything. And that makes you, you know, it creates new conversations, think differently, and creating something new in the process by, you know, that realization, you don't know everything, you've got to learn. And that's the best way to create something new.
It really does sound like an extremely unusual car design job. Most designers get a brief, and the brief is that you need to make a car. It's about this size and about this price. Mm. That's really not what you guys do at all.
No.
How do you think GM benefits from having satellite design studios like yours? What can you do that they can't do in-house? I guess there's an agility to the way you guys work.
Definitely. First of all, very, very good point, our size. Because we're small, we can, we're definitely more agile. We can create things a little bit quicker, you could say. And we can be very provocative. You know, we're not HQ, so we're there to really challenge, really explore new ideas and offer a test bed for not just design but also technologies. The way we embed technology into our processes, try new technologies out as well. We can be this. Yeah, we always see ourselves sometimes as test pilots for new things. But the way GM can really, really benefit, I think, you know, we've got that zoomed out view. So we can kind of almost get a bit more clarity on what's going on by zooming out, seeing things very fresh. And having something based in Europe, you know, you look at, it's great that we've got this studio now, and GM has a genuine global design presence now, because that was missing until we joined. They've got studios in the Far East and in California as well as Detroit. There's something about Europe. It's super competitive in Europe, and you've got people who are very, I think, you know, they really buy into brands that have real purpose and really stand for something. And so what we try and do is bring this level of thinking to make sure that, you know, we ask all the questions. We ask why a lot. First of all, why? Just so we can understand, you know, and create justification for why brands should exist, what it can stand for, what it can mean, and create a very, very clear and unique point of view on the brands. And in Europe as well, there's so much culture, there's so much diversity in cultures, a lot of design schools, a lot of studios, a lot of suppliers, all in quite close proximity. And it means it's just a very rich ideas region. And also, if you think of the European way of designing, there's a lot of art history. There's a lot of great architecture. There's a sophistication to some of the best European design. European brands are famous for in the luxury segments, craftsmanship. So we just bring all this as well when we're developing designs and developing our visions. And I think it's really beneficial to the operation.
As I understand it, your team focuses mostly not on stuff that's going to come out next year or the year after, but will inform stuff that may well come out way down the line.
Yeah.
This might seem a silly question, but I've always been curious. How do you design stuff for the not so near future without making it deliberately futuristic looking in a way that can be a bit sort of contrived? Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So I think historically, advanced design has always been about creating dreams for 20 years away. And there's a place for that. But I think the way things are these days, you're seeing how things are evolving. Time to market is a lot quicker. You're seeing a great rate of creative change in what brands are doing in China. And I think really our job is to give a really imaginative and brave and creative view, but make sure it's technically, it's got substance and it can be made. Because we want to offer, we don't say, hey, look at this, this is amazing, but yeah, it's never going to happen. And maybe in 20 years you can have it. These days, customers, they kind of want the greatest, best, most progressive thing now. And so what we try and do is offer some really extreme and very progressive, very disruptive design, but in a very desirable way that and with the technical capability in our team, give it that substance so it could be progressed if there was a desire to do so. And I think that's really important. Basically, creating things that are as inspiring and as desirable as a dream car, but bringing it, to reality as quick as possible as well. That's what we pride ourselves in offering GM. That's very important. And I think basically, it's a fine line between like, it's got to be progressive enough. But I think also there's so much disruption and uncertainty in all sorts of areas, all industries really at the moment. And what we say is, and it's something I spoke about before, but that in the business, you want other stakeholders in the business, like marketing, engineering, or different departments, they've got to come to the advanced design studio. They've got to come to design and the advanced design studio and just go, wow, we need to build that. We've got to inspire the business and give them clarity. We've got to give them direction. And show them the way forward. And I think, that's what we really strive to do, rather than just saying, hey, here's loads of options, take your pick, and then the uncertainty continues. So we want to be very focused with what we show and create a vision that's very holistic and meaningful and profound and something that the company can anchor a direction to and say, okay, then let's go this way. And I think that is the responsibility of advanced design these days.
I've seen pictures of your studio and you've got all the best and latest toys. You're very, very lucky. You've got some seriously cool stuff in there that enables your small team to, as you say, be really agile in the way they work. The latest clay modeling equipment, I believe. I saw. That's very cool.
Yeah.
How about AI? That's obviously the buzzword of the moment. Yeah. There are some pretty astonishing AI tools now available to designers. How much are you leaning on those as a team?
So it's no secret, is it? And AI is something we can talk about for a whole day, and at the end of that day, your capability will have progressed further in that time we've spoken. I think and we've had a lot of talk about it today in this event. It's an absolute hot topic. I think AI is developing so quickly that it's actually, you could say, it's quite overwhelming, and it could be quite chaotic in our process. If we don't start to figure out how to properly integrate it into our process to enable us all to fulfill our potential as designers and visualization artists and modelers, and we're pretty much in quite an early phase of this. We are figuring that out. We are trying to figure that out. We do use it. We don't rely on it at all, and definitely not yet. And I think basically, you know, we've got to really hone in on what our priorities are, what we're trying to achieve, and how can we use AI to enable us to create a better design and a better design output, and not get distracted with all the things AI can do, but actually that doesn't necessarily keep us on our track to create the vision. So we are figuring this out. We are talking about the ethics of it and how it affects our culture as a design team, to make sure that everyone can still be the best at their job and express their specialist skills and how it can make their specialist skills even better and make their job even more enjoyable. Because, you know, with AI, you get some people are super positive, some people are very defensive and want to brush it into the carpet. But it's an inevitable part of our life, and it's going to have a positive impact on many industries. And so yeah, we have to work on how it can best serve us as almost like being another designer in the team. You're bouncing ideas off, and you're sort of like growing in ideas together. So what we don't want to see is just it being abused in the way that it just creates loads of random options, and it's almost like, well, where's the idea? What's the idea here? What is the designer's thought process? What are we trying to achieve? What's the idea? So yeah, we're going to try and develop this, and these conversations are things we're even having in the team now of how we're going to adopt that. So I'd say we shouldn't be scared of it. We should embrace it, but really make it work for us and to achieve our objectives, really.
The importance of human input and human creativity is not going to disappear anytime soon.
No.
Cause reassuring to know.
Exactly. Human beings have still got the imagination, the spontaneity, we still do random, strange things that can create completely new ideas and directions. And I think human beings are the ones with the judgment, with the sense makers of all this, and I think and I always say that we practice our human skills. We try and practice our human skills as much as our digital skills. Human beings are the ones that you can debate with and argue with and have fun with and create with, and I think you know, the way we are at work and how in you know how much fun we have at work is a real part of creating new things. I think you can always see in a design if they had fun doing it, if the team had fun doing it. I think you can sometimes see that. You can there'll be a spontaneity to the design. There'll be a flow. There'll be a natural kind of feel to design and an excitement to it. And so I hope you see that in our Corvette concept. And there's more to come from us as well, hopefully over time. And yeah, we really, really enjoy what we're doing. We're very creatively fulfilled, and that human element is hugely important to us. You know, AI can't offer motivational leadership. It can't necessarily inspire us and get us to you know, to think about different things. I think the human interaction and human debate and creative thought process is still absolutely prevalent in our team.
A few speedy quick fire questions just to wrap
up. Yeah, yeah. Go.
Okay. What's a project that you've worked on during your career that you look back on especially fondly, whether it's because of the end result or because of the experience of developing it?
It's not so quick, is it?
It's not an easy question. You've worked on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we've worked on a lot of stuff. I've been very lucky, very, very, very lucky in my career. I'm just trying to think of something that, you know, I've got to say, I think I've just got to go to it. The what we've just done as a team, the callback concept. I know it's the freshest thing. I know it's like the thing we've just done. That was an amazing team effort. Such a unique project. Day one, we joined GM, a few of us, and the phone rang, and it's like, hey, welcome to GM. Do you want to show us what a Corvette hypercar concept would look like? And that was like,
that's an intense first day. Reinvent an iconic sports car.
Yeah, intense, but without doubt, like a dream project, absolute dream. Like as a car designer to have that brief, it's like, wow. So we really enjoy doing that as a team, you know. And I've got to say, fresh off my mind at the minute, but that's the thing that I'd love to point to and say I was part of that team. And I say part of that team, you know, many people involved, all our sort of specialist areas contributed to make that what it is. And we're talking from brand strategy to designers. That initial spark sketch was a guy called Oliver Cattell Ford, the exterior. And then that's the start of the process in terms of the aesthetics. The design technical, it's got a great technical story in there as well. It gives it a very unique angle. The interior design and exterior design really work well together too. And all the great visualization we've done, and even the photography we've done of the car, led by Ian McShane's team, means that what we do is, you know, we do a complete end-to-end process. We're a fully resourceful end-to-end process team, just 35 of us, from that brand strategy and purpose, the first sketch, the modeling, the rendering, the visualization and the photography, launch assets. We do it all as one small team. And it means that that's where we can hand over to GM. Hey, here's the full story. And here's our view. And that's very empowering and very motivating. And it's a credit to the GM leadership who give us that freedom and welcome our thoughts.
I won't pull you up on citing your last project as your favorite, because first of all, every designer of ours says that. And I suppose that's a good thing. It means you're enjoying your jobs. And like secondly, it is such a radically different project to pretty much everything else you've done. So I'll allow it.
Thank you. That's not very five fast questions, is it? That's just another really long question.
Kind of a good conversation. Let's finish with this then. A little nugget of advice to budding car designers, whether they're still studying, whether they've just graduated and they're looking for their first job, maybe just started in the industry. Mm-hmm. What's a piece of advice that would stand them in good stead based on your experiences?
I think there's never been a better time to be a car designer, because we are in a position of asking what's next. How, you know, you talk about AI, how does that get used? You look at the disruption in the industry. What do we do next? There's so many questions. There's so many opportunities, therefore, and creativity will always shine through and win the day. What we look for in students, I'd say, is again that spark. And you can have all the best technology to your disposal, but that spark, that idea, what's your thought process? What are you thinking about? The little sketches that show how the designer's brain is working, that's what really, really attracts us. So advice I would give is to be very open-minded, be humble, learn new things, continually upskill, but always just practice that you know, the little doodles, the little sketches that just show how your brain is working. You know, your brain to the page directly. There's nothing beats that in terms of just sparking that idea. So in your portfolio, always have those loose sketches, those sparks of an idea, and try and stand out. I mean, you know, young generations, you could say they're saying, oh, we're not buying cars, we're not that interested. Well, you know, show us. So what car do you want? What car would you buy? You know, show us the new ideas. Don't just try and do things you think we'll like. Like, what is your idea? Have fun with it. Show us something really fun. Show us something that will get our attention. We do see a lot of portfolios, a lot of talent, so much talent in the industry. But I'd say, yeah, work hard, be humble, respect people. It's a very global yet tiny industry. We all know each other. And if you're a respectful, hardworking, humble person, that will go a long way. But have fun with what you do. Show that in your portfolio and surprise us a little bit.
Dom, that was a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this CDE podcast. Please like and subscribe to discover new episodes and upcoming events.